ओम ज्ञान तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जन शलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
Recently, a series of questions were presented to me by Savyasachi Das, a devotee who's presently stationed in Tamil Nadu, who is specifically concerned with establishing Varnashram projects. He's dedicated particularly in that line. So he asked me many questions which arose from his considering how to do this. It's not just a matter of starting a farm or even of starting a community. I mean, those two propositions in themselves are major propositions, but actually to establish Vaishnav society, it appears to be a major proposition. How is it possible? Harenama, 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 eva kevalam kalo nastreva, 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 gatiranyata. By the mercy of Lord Krishna, who has kindly manifested, made himself easily available, particularly in this Kali Yuga, as his holy name, everything is possible. Kali Kale Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar Nam Hoite Hoi Sarva Jagat Nishta. In Kali Yuga, Krishna has descended as his name, in the form of his name, and by this holy name the whole universe will be delivered. So there are many, there are several questions. Many of them are related to Savyasachi Prabhu's reading of the English translation of the book of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur regarding Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, and what is the relationship between the positions of Brahmanas and Vaishnavas? Are all Brahmanas Vaishnavas? Well, no, that's pretty obviously no, if we take the term Brahman in a conventional sense. Are all Vaishnavas Brahmanas? Yes and no. So I'll attempt to discuss this, these topics along the lines of the questions, according to my admittedly limited knowledge and realization, but it's not absolutely zero, so I will attempt or dare to take up these topics. And Vidvan Gauranga Prabhu has also, I presume, studied these topics to some degree and can also add some comment. I don't even know if there's time, there's so many questions. I already spoke on this for approximately 1 hour. About three weeks ago, was it? So some of the points I made at that time may be glossed over or just stated temporarily here. If you want to get the first session, what do you do if you want to get the first session? Wait for it to come up on the net. Will be available very soon. Okay. At bbks.com. Okay, it is his question one. Actually, all these questions are interrelated. Before I start, maybe I should make some observations. That when we see the term Brahmana and the term Vaishnava written in Srila Prabhupada's books or in Shastra in general, as with many other terms, we have to understand the term contextually. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna uses the word Atma often. It has to be understood contextually. In other words, according to the particular usage in that particular place. In fact, all of Shastra has to be understood like that. Which is another reason why it's required that there be Brahmanas who who have understood Shastra through the explanations of the Acharyas in Parampara and explain these subtleties. Otherwise, if we misunderstand, then we can come up with bizarre theories, such as that the terms Ishvara, Brahma, and Atma, they all mean the same thing. This is what you'll get from the Shankaracharyas. They put them all, it all means the same thing, right? Ishvara, Atma, you are Atma, right? And Ishvara, so you and Ishvara, it's all the same. Atma can mean Brahma, and Ishvara can mean Brahma, but Atma does not equal Ishvara. Although it can, and so Atma, when in a certain context, Atma means Paramatma, but not in every context, so it has to be understood carefully. So in the same way, Brahmana, this term Brahmana, can be understood in three basic ways, or three ways that I've just, when I was thinking about it, I thought about it. In a conventional way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur speaks of vyavaharik, or conventional brahmanas, and paramarthik brahmanas. He speaks of two divisions, conventional and spiritual brahmanas. So brahmana, conventional brahmana means one who's born in a Brahmin family. And nowadays, I identified three symptoms of what it means to be a Brahmana in the modern age. You have a name, something like Mishra or Sharma, and you get your daughter or son, you try to get your son or daughter married to someone from the Brahmana caste if they don't run off with a Muslim before you manage to do that. And what was the third one? I said in Erkot, they consider themselves, they get the Upanayanam ceremony done for their sons. Dare just before the marriage. Saves money to do it just before the marriage. So none of these qualities have got anything to do with anything that's meant to, the essence of Brahmanism. But a conventional Brahmana means one who's born in a Brahmin family. And this usage is common in Shastra, because previously those born in Brahmin families were Brahmanas, not by birth, janmana jayate shudra, but they were expected to, it was understood that by taking birth in such families, they were placed in such a womb with the garbhadhan sanskar, and by the arrangement of, what is that? Karmana daivani trainer jantur deho papatiye. Under the guidance of the Supreme Lord and the demigods, and according to the previous activities and mentality of living beings, they get placed in different wombs. So generally those born in Brahmana families, it's expected that they have a pious background. It's not always true. Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Ravana, they are examples of persons born of Brahmins, but very, well, the most famous demons in the whole of history. But generally it's expected that they will be pious by background and suitable for training as Brahmanas. They're not Brahmanas by birth, but it's considered they're suitable for training. But what is that Brahmanism? It's the highest rank in the Varnashram system. Actually, I'm just repeating what I said the last time. I guess we have to say that before we can go on to the rest. So the whole Varnashram system is, it's meant to be an interface between the material and the spiritual. People acting on a material platform, but on one that will, if it's managed properly, if directed properly, will help people to come to the spiritual platform. Almost everybody in the, well, it depends again on the society, but who's leading it and what are the, leaders means the kings and the acharyas in society. It depends on them very much what kind of atmosphere is there, but at least with the progress of Kali Yuga, the influential brahmanas have been persons like Mandana Mishra and Shankaracharya, who recommended karmakandiya activities, that you perform work according to the Vedic directions, and in this way you become pious. Of course, Mandanam, karma mimamsakas, their idea is just to enjoy this material world, but Shankaracharya's idea, which we as Vaishnavas also accept, is that the Varnashram system is meant to prepare. By performing pious activities, one eventually becomes satiated, and then one goes on to the standard Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now one should inquire into the nature of spiritual reality. And then one becomes a Paramarthic Brahmana. And within that there are two phases. Those who are seeking for the truth, and those who have actually found the truth. Brahma Janatiti Brahmana. And so the real Brahmana is a fully realized, fully knowledgeable Vaishnava who knows that the supreme truth is Krishna. He's not looking for the truth so much as he's already accepted. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavang mang prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabha. By going through the whole Varnashram process, one manushanam sahasreshu kastidyatati siddhiye, a rare person may actually become interested in spiritual endeavor, and out of those, after many, many lifetimes, someone may come to the point of understanding that ultimate spiritual reality is Krishna. That person then becomes a Vaishnava. So that's the Varnashram purificatory system, which it's purificatory. What's that? Don't know. It's purificatory. It's ultimately meant to lead to Krishna consciousness, and at the least we can say it helps people or prevents them from falling into grossly sinful life, which we see at the present time. That without Varnashram, people are becoming extremely sinful. So the three divisions of brahmanas are conventional brahmanas who are pious, some at least somewhat learned in the Vedas, following Vedic injunctions, but not very spiritual, materialistic, but piously materialistic. And then spiritual brahmanas and spiritually realized brahmanas. Now, paramarthic brahmana, that doesn't necessarily, a Vaishnava, no, that's good. So a Vaishnava is a full-fledged brahmana. Now, a brahmana is not necessarily a Vaishnava, but a Vaishnava is necessarily a brahmana, whatever caste he may be born in. Because Brahmanism means to understand Krishna. So if you understand Krishna, then it doesn't matter what caste you're born in, you're a Brahmana, in the true sense of the term. So when we see the word Brahmana mentioned in Shastra and Srila Prabhupada's books, we have to understand contextually what is being referred to here. Or it may be that what's being stated can be understood on various levels. Just like if we see, a brahmana is engaged in pious activities. So that's true of a karmakandiya brahmana. And that's also true of a Vaishnava. But a Vaishnava who's a brahmana, but his pious activities are not mundane pious activities. So, and Vaishnava also, this term, when we see it, we see written, just like we'll often see written in Srila Prabhupada's books, a Vaishnava is transcendental to the modes of material nature. It's true, isn't it? But then we also refer to a Vaishnava, you and me, and if I look inside what's going on in my consciousness, I don't find transcendental to the modes of material nature. As much as I endeavor to be a Vaishnava, that endeavor is purifying, but I don't find I've come to the purified state. So a Vaishnava is transcendental to the modes of material nature, but how much am I a Vaishnava? That we also have to see. As much as I am contaminated by the modes of material nature, then I'm not a Vaishnava. So statements like that, a Vaishnava is transcendental to the modes of material nature, then you think, well, I'm a Vaishnava, so I must be transcendental to the modes of material nature. You see, I'm initiated, so I must be perfect. That's it. But that's a misunderstanding. So, the first question. Brahmanatva is included in Vaishnavism as rupees 10 is included in rupees 100. Right? If you have 100 rupees, that means you have 10 rupees. If you have 10 rupees, you don't have 100 rupees. So, if one is a Brahmana, he's not necessarily a Vaishnava, but if one is a Vaishnava, one is a Brahmana. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur expected that his disciples exhibit the qualities of brahmanas and in addition the spiritual qualities. This is quoted or paraphrased from Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhav. Thus, every sincere Vaishnava sooner or later will naturally manifest qualities of a brahmana. Now in Daiva Varnashram, Vaishnavas undertake the varna duties as per their qualities. If all the Vaishnavas are going to have Brahmana qualities in common, on what basis will they assume different Varna duties? Okay, so this question is based on a misunderstanding. Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. Why? Because he is Krishna. Bhaktosi me sakha chaiti rahasyam hi atarutama. I'm speaking this to you, Arjuna, because you are my devotee. Now, there are many other devotees who are present in the world at that time, such as Vyasadeva, who eventually recorded Gita in Mahabharata. He was very scholarly and very philosophical, but Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, who we can't expect, at least from the conventional perspective, it wasn't expected that Arjuna is going to be as great a philosopher and scholar as Vyasadeva, or even Uddhava for that matter, who was also a student of Brihaspati. Whereas Arjuna, his training had been, his major training, he majored in, you could say, in Dhanurveda, in the skills of fighting with a bow. Do we need that fan? It's noisy, isn't it? Tangs to tikshasva bharata. Tolerate the dreadful heat. It's all of 27 degrees in here. Actually Arjuna's proposal was something to that effect. You know, I'm going to be a Brahmana. Forget this fighting. This is horrible. I don't want to fight. I'm going to become a Tyagi. I'm going to become a Brahmana. He didn't exactly say I'm going to become a Brahmana, but his idea was to become a pacifist. And I'm not going to fight. It's not good. But Krishna spoke transcendental knowledge to Arjuna and then told him to, and on the basis of that, he expected Arjuna to fight. And it's not that he was expected after hearing Bhagavad Gita, manchayo vihabicharena bhakti yogena sevate, sagunan samatityaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. One who was my fully dedicated devotee who serves me unflinchingly, unfailingly, Krishna says, such a person is automatically transcends the modes of material nature. So what's Arjuna supposed to do? Go sit down and chant his rounds? But Krishna sent him to fight. So it's not that every pure devotee appears to be like a Brahmin. The pure devotee, by his nature, as Krishna speaks of swabhava, he uses this term, by his inborn nature. It may be Brahminical, it may be Kshatriya type, or others also. Now, the qualities that pure devotees manifest, they are, however, not within the... It's not that Arjuna was a Kshatriya, therefore we think he must have been in Rajogun. Arjuna is a pure devotee of Krishna, and he's completely transcendental to the modes of material nature. But the activities within this material world, they, as we've many times heard, they are a perverted reflection of the qualities of the spiritual world. So we find in the spiritual world, Nanda Maharaj is what appears to be like a Vaishya, which is not considered a very high caste. It's not considered the best caste for spiritual advancement. But Nanda Maharaj doesn't have to make any spiritual advancement. Millions and trillions of brahmanas together, their spiritual advancement isn't even one drop of Nanda Maharaj's spiritual advancement. He's totally perfect at the highest level of perfection that's worshipable by brahmanas, if only they had enough sense to worship him. So Nanda Maharaj is a Vaishya, but the Vaishyas are said to be of the mixed Rajoguna and Tamoguna. Maybe there's some admixture of Sattva there also. But Nanda Maharaj is not under the modes of material nature. Arjuna is not under the modes of material nature. They're completely perfect transcendental personalities. But within Krishna's Leela, there is variety, and there are varieties of persons who manifest varieties of qualities which help to nourish Krishna's Leela. Now, what about a devotee in this world who comes from a situation within the modes of material nature? And they take up Krishna consciousness and they become purified. When one is completely purified, then he's a perfect brahmana. But it doesn't necessarily mean that he will engage in the activities of a brahmana. Perfectly purified means one is perfectly serving Krishna. And it may be with the qualities one has acquired in this particular birth. If one is in this birth, one may have a Vaishya tendency. So it's not that as one takes up Krishna consciousness, that tendency is changed or likely to change, but that is to be dovetailed in Krishna's service. And one can be a completely pure devotee, even though one is born in this world with various tendencies. But those tendencies, if dovetailed in Krishna's service, that becomes completely pure. Now, we may say, well, that's a contamination. That tendency is a contamination. It was a contamination, as long as it's not engaged in Krishna's service. We may say, well, when one takes up bhakti, then all the previous sanskars or tendencies, they are destroyed. In one sense, yes. In another sense, no. It's not just like we have this gross body is a product of our previous activities. So if we say that the results of all our previous activities are destroyed when we take up bhakti, then this body should also be destroyed. But the subtle body, the gross body and the subtle body, they can be purified by engaging in Krishna's service. That doesn't mean that they are material. When they're engaged in Krishna's service, they become fully spiritual. The example is the fan, when it's turned off, it appears to, it keeps on running, but there's some residual activity of the current, although the current is gone. You're not going to produce another body. If one is acting as a Vaishya on the material platform, that will produce another body. If one is engaging in activities, business or whatever it may be, or fighting in Arjuna's case, but he does it solely for the pleasure of Krishna, under the guidance of Krishna or his representative, then that is pure devotional service, and that leads one to get a pure spiritual body. That is not material. We may say, well, that body and that tendency is a result of previous karmas. But what happens is that when one takes a devotional service, manghi paratavya pashraja, not that verse, Mahatmana sumang parata daiving prakriti maashritaha. Those who are great devotees, they are fully under the shelter of Krishna's internal energy. So devotees acting in this world, they're under the supervision of Krishna's internal energy. But that acts in this world through the agency of the external energy. That's why if we see a devotee, it may appear that he has a material body, a material suffering, but we should never say, we may conventionally say, the spiritual master is sick. But we should know that a pure devotee, they're not sick. If they're sick, it's not in the way that an ordinary person is. It's not impelled by karma. That's warned in Chaitanya Bhagavat, that jato deko vaishnava bebahaduk nischoy janeho taha chira, what is it? Chirananda suk. That if one sees a devotee apparently suffering, we shouldn't think that he's suffering. Parananda suk. We should know that devotee is always situated in spiritual happiness. We were just reading that now. What is that? Prabhu kahe vaishnavaya. What is that? Prabhu kahe vaishnavaya deho prakrita kabu nai. A prakrita deho vaishnav chidanandamai. Same thing. Chaitanya, when Sanatana Goswami was thinking, my body is material, it's low caste, it's sick, it's diseased, I can't serve Krishna, so better I commit suicide by jumping under Jagannath's cart. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that no, a Vaishnava's body is never material. It's completely spiritual. Then the next verse, Dikko kale bhakta kare atasham arpon shay kale krishna tare kare atasham. When one is initiated and fully surrenders to Krishna, then Krishna accepts the devotee as the same level as himself. He means he accepts him as fully spiritual. What's the verse after that? Shay deha kare tare chidanandamai aprakrita dehe tare charanay bhajan. Yeah. That in a spiritual body, the devotee worships Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is referring to Sanatana Goswami's body, which appeared to be diseased with all pus oozing out of it. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, your body is completely spiritual. So what do we understand by that? Spiritual body, but that's not in exactly the same sense as the spiritual body of Krishna when he comes to this world. It appears to be material. It appears to be under the influence of the material energy, but it's Krishna's internal energy working through the are apparently manifested within this material world. So it's not that everyone who takes up Krishna consciousness is going to be a great scholar, Brahminical in the sense we think of in as an intellectual. He may have an apparently very rough nature or a violent nature. Arjuna had he was a very cultured, extremely cultured person, extremely principled person, but he had a very strong violent streak in him. Otherwise, he couldn't kill people. But that violence was controlled, completely controlled. He could kill or not kill. He would first of all consider, what is my duty? Then he would act. He would decide what to do. Extremely principled. So in that sense, he was a brahmana. He didn't unnecessarily get angry. If necessarily, he would get angry, but not unnecessarily. So in that sense, he was completely self-controlled. And that's one of the principal symptoms of a brahmana, is that he's completely self-controlled. But it's very difficult to attain. But a pure Vaishnav has attained that, or is on that platform, because he only acts for the pleasure of Krishna. Although his duty as a servant of Krishna might be to kill others. In the case of Arjuna. In the modern age, we're not going to make something like the fundamentalist wing of the Hare Krishna movement and the Al-Qaeda of ISKCON. No, we're not going to do that. We're not going to start blowing people up or any such thing. It's in Kali Yuga, the killing is by Harinam. Kill the demoniac mentality. That Bhagavad Gita was spoken on a battlefield, inducing Arjuna to violence, but that's not for the modern age. For in other ages, yes. And in Varnashram society, there has to be violence in every society, at least to control the thieves. But that will be a specific group of people, just like in the modern, or in any society, there has to be police. So they have to be violent at times, but they under certain rules and regulations and for a proper purpose. So, yeah, there have to be police in every, or whatever term is there, in every society. But it doesn't mean that because they might have to catch a criminal and beat him or shoot him or whatever, that they can't be pure devotees, or that service is given to someone who's less than a pure devotee. They can be a completely pure devotee and perform activities which may not seem as pure. But fighting for Krishna, as Arjuna, Krishna instructed Arjuna, fighting for Krishna is pure if Krishna actually wants it. Whereas avoiding to fight for Krishna on the grounds of being pure, that's not pure. So it's not that in Varnashram everyone has to be a brahmana. Everyone has to be a devotee of Krishna. And that's repeated then in Bhagavad Gita, that in whatever station one is, Swakarmana tam abhyacha siddhim vindati manava. Everyone, by performing their duties within Varnashram and worshipping Krishna, they can achieve all perfection. In Manghi Partavya Pashricha Yepi Syuf Papa Yoneha Striyo Vaishas Tata Shudras Tepi Yanti Param Gatim. Krishna says, even the people who, because of their previous sinful activities, they are born in a lower section of society, and it's mentioned, Vaishya Shudra women. Now, of course, someone born as a Shudra in Vedic society, they're much more pious than someone born as a Shama or Mishra in Bangalore in 2010. So, but that's considered lower. Lower, but Krishna says they can attain the supreme perfection if they take shelter in me, because that in itself is the supreme perfection. They've already achieved the supreme perfection. Then, King Puna Brahmana Punya Bhakta Raja Shayastata Anityam Asukam Lokam Imam Prapya Bhajaswama. Then what to speak, Krishna says, of the Brahmanas and the Kshatriyas. They should certainly attain me. Everyone can attain me, Krishna says, if they worship me. Imam Prapya, attaining this birth in this material world, miserable world, if the, Bhajasva Mam, that's the point that Krishna's making. They have to worship me. It's not ultimate. One gets higher or lower positions of according to one's previous karmas, but these become irrelevant if in the matter of worshipping Krishna. Anyone can worship Krishna, but that doesn't mean that Arjuna has to become a Brahmana. It's still the same duties will be performed, but for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna says, one, they will attain all perfection by doing so. So it's not that in Varnashram society, even though, or in Daivi Varnashram, if everyone is to be a Vaishnava, it still doesn't mean that then everyone's all the same. There are divisions. Now, Srila Prabhupada described that spiritually in Vaishnava society, everyone is on the same platform in as much as everyone's a Vaishnava. But still there have to be divisions. It's just practical. It's not that everyone's going to be a teacher, everyone's going to be a doctor, or just that someone's a teacher you'll need 6 months teacher, then 6 months doctor, and then 6 months potter, and 6 months cowherder. It doesn't work. You need training for a specific duty, and then you go on doing that. So spiritually, everyone's equal, but there are different divisions of labor, that's all. So the next question. I mean, I'm trying to keep this fairly brief, although, you know, I don't think, there's no way I'm going to finish this by 6:30. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that worshippers of demigods are stated to be fools by Lord Krishna, and thus they cannot be brahmanas. Yeah, because in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, kamaistaistai hritagyana prapadyantena devataha. Those who worship demigods are impelled by material desires, and they are hritagyana, which means nashta buddhi. Their intelligence is spoiled. So they're fools. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that anyone who worships demigods, they can't be a Brahmana. If a Brahmana worships a demigod, he can't be a Brahmana, because a Brahmana means intelligent. And only Krishna says in Antavattu Palangte Sham Tad Bhavatyalpa Medhasa. People of only Alpa Medhas, people of small intelligence, they worship demigods for material results. So they can't be Brahmanas. But then Brahmanas, we can say in one sense they're Brahmanas, they may be conventionally considered Brahmanas, but they're not Brahmanas in the true sense of the term. You got that point? It's not difficult to understand, right? Someone may be called a Brahmana even if they're worshipping demigods, because that's the duty of a Brahmana, to perform pujas and various forms of worship. But one who is worshipping demigods, they can't be a Brahman in the full sense of the term, because a Brahman in the full sense of the term means someone who is very intelligent, understands what the supreme truth is, that is Krishna, and worships Krishna. So a real Brahmana worships Krishna. So in one sense, what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says is not true. They may be called Brahmanas in a conventional sense, but not in the full sense of the term. They're not really Brahmanas. I have a train of thought going. Please note it down, and we'll come back to it later. Here's an example. Adityana Mahang Vishnu. Among the Adityas, Krishna says, I am Vishnu. Who is that? Aditya means son of Aditi. So which son of Aditi? Vamanadev. So Vamanadev, he's one of the demigods, right? Aditya means demigod, right? So, is he a demigod or is he the Supreme Lord? He's a demigod and the Supreme Lord. If you say he's a demigod, he's true, it's true, but he's a lot more than a demigod. So in the same way, Vaishnavas, they're Brahmanas, but they're a lot more than Brahmanas. They're intrinsically on a different platform altogether. Now again, that doesn't mean that everyone who just walks in the door and says, okay, I think I want to be a Vaishnava, it doesn't mean that they don't automatically get the same cultural qualities as someone who's born in a Brahmana family and they've been trained in those cultural qualities from birth. And it may be that even throughout their life they don't gain those cultural qualities. Which is why it may be difficult for people who are born in Brahmana families. They've been trained in Brahminical behavior. They know Sanskrit and they know how to quote, they know to recite stotrams and so many things. Well, you're 1 hour late. It's supposed to be open at 4:30. Hey, you know what? Prabhupada in Vrindavan, when the curtains opened a few seconds late, he said, it's very difficult to be a Brahmana. They're 1 hour. They still haven't opened. It's 55 minutes late. So, what was I saying? Yeah, the persons born in Brahmana families and they see our devotees. Jai Jagannath, Jai Subhadrama, Jai Baladev. Jai Dvijamani Gora, the jewel among the Dvijas, the Gauranga. So they may think, you know, here are these people coming from the West or coming there, like coming from some backward caste, they're black, they're ugly, and they can't even speak Kannada properly, what to speak of Sanskrit. And they're trying to tell us that they're Brahmanas. So it's not a bad idea that our devotees, if we can't speak Sanskrit properly and we are not very cultured in our behavior, that when we meet conventional Brahmanas who do have this culture, if we are a little humble also and recognize that, after all, they do have Brahminical qualities that we are not likely to ever have in this lifetime. We can learn from them, actually, also. Now, the question continues. Brahmanas are said to be in goodness, and those in goodness are said to be worshippers of demigods in chapter 17 of Bhagavad Gita. Yajante, what is that? Yajante sattvico devan. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, those in goodness, they worship the demigods. Now that may seem very surprising, considering in Bhagavad Gita, again, everything has to be understood contextually. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna opens up talking about how the demigods have to be worshipped. And then later on he says that those who worship demigods for material gains, they are foolish. Then again he says that those in goodness, they worship demigods. My understanding of this is that this Yajante Sattviko Devan, this comes just when Arjuna asks about people, what about those people who worship with faith but not according to Shastra? It's faith, but it's not according to Shastra. And then Krishna replies that there are three kinds of Shraddha. Sattviki, Rajasi, Tamasi, Shraddha. And then he explains that there was Yajante Sattviko Devan, Yaksha Rakshansi Rajasam. Then the in Rajogun they worship Rakshasas and Yakshas. So this is the kinds of worship they perform. Now the kind of worship that is performed by those in goodness is Shastra. It's according to Shastra. Demigod worship means according to Shastra. So in that respect, it's in sattva gun, because according to Shastra. And then, which is not according to Shastra, then that's in the lower modes. And the devas themselves, of course, they're primarily in the quality of goodness. So again, this is an apparent contradiction. Yes, there are many apparent contradictions in Shastra. Many apparent. But again, we have to understand everything contextually. Brahmanas are of the mode of goodness, yes. But if a Brahmana, he may be in the mode, primarily in the mode of goodness, but then if his activities are meant for, he's performing sattvic activities, sacrifices, and following all the duties for Brahmanas. Brahmana has a very busy life. He has to rise early and then take bath. Taking bath is not just jumping in the shower, and it's a whole, so many things to do, all part of, and sandhya vandanam and yajnas, and they don't even get time to eat until midday, and then they have to feed everyone before that also. Brahmanas don't take breakfast. Traditional Brahmanas. They're busy. They don't take until midday. Twice a day they take. Once between sunrise and sunset, and once after sunset. They're allowed to eat, traditionally. In many. So they have a busy life, and it's all following. Everything they do is directed by Shastra. How their house is built, every single detail of everything they do, how they wear their clothes, what they wear, and what kind of jewels, and so many things, how their hair is, or not hair is, and it's completely according to Shastra. But nevertheless, if the ultimate motive is materialistic, then although it's a highly sattvic lifestyle, it's also much tinged with rajogun. So we can understand when Krishna is speaking in Bhagavad Gita about the different kinds of faith in sattva, raja, tama, different. It's all, it's indicative. It's not that everyone's completely in sattva gun or there's someone completely in raja gun. Just like Krishna talks about the different kinds of food. But some food, it may be mixed. It may have some qualities of sattva gun and some qualities of raja gun. So the smarter, another question, will not the smarter brahmanas of Dwarpa Yoga or before when Vedic sacrifice could properly be performed be accepted as brahmanas, though they would worship Vishnu along with other demigods for their material well-being? Yes, they're brahmanas, but not in the fullest sense. If yes, will they be vyavaharic brahmanas? Is there yet to attain spiritual brahmanatva? Yes. Then question 2b. In the book Brahmana and Vaishnava, the definition of brahmana states, one who is devoid of thirst for material enjoyment. It seems a karma kandya. Again, this question is, it seems a karma kandya cannot be a brahmana. But again, the statements have to be understood in context. A brahmana is one who is devoid of thirst for material enjoyment. So yes, that's the middle level of brahmana I was talking about, one who's interested in spiritual life. But one who's a conventional brahmana, he's also considered a brahmana in one way. But if we take a higher understanding of the word brahmana, then others become disqualified. It's just like Prabhupada. He would sometimes meet someone and say, "Oh, you're a brahmana." They're born just by the name. He'd say, "You're a brahmana. You should practice Krishna consciousness very seriously. You're not living as a brahmana," but Prabhupada would say, "You're a brahmana." He would appeal to his sense of caste identity, that you should practice this very seriously. Prabhupada knows that from the philosophical understanding, he's not a brahmana. But he may consider himself or be considered by others a brahmana in some way, and Prabhupada would appeal to that, to bring him up to the actual platform of a brahmana. It is stated that in Kali Yuga, Karmakanda sacrifices can no longer be performed properly. Thus, today, for those who are not devotees, what will be the way to prevent them from degrading so that gradually they can be elevated and take to devotion in future? Well, presumably this question is referring to, it's not just the Karmakanda sacrifices that help people from becoming degraded, but it's the whole institution of Varnashram. So that's why Prabhupada, what will help people from degrading is Harinam. That will not only help them from degrading, but that will elevate them. But Srila Prabhupada wanted to institute Varnashram also because people are not taking Harinam fully and seriously, and therefore the tendency for degradation remains strong. And also the society that we live in is so much unfavorable for cultivating Krishna consciousness. It requires time to cultivate Krishna consciousness. We need several hours a day to do the basic sadhana that's required. Most of our devotees nowadays don't perform even the basic sadhana that's expected traditionally of Vaishnavas and that Srila Prabhupada expected of his disciples. One major reason for this is because they don't have time. At least in India, people are very busy. They don't have time. I mean, they could maybe make time, but it's very difficult when you're working long hours. And another is the whole environment is not conducive to that. It's a highly materialistic society. So Prabhupada wanted to make Varnashram communities in which people could live and devotional. Not just Varnashram. Our aim is not just to set up some Varnashram, but it's strongly centered on Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So that people can join these communities and be Krishna conscious, or at least not become deeply degraded. Now, if people don't chant Hare Krishna, then they're going to become very much degraded in the modern age. There's not much in between. There are not many pious people left in the world. And even today, what we call pious, just like in here in South India, the Brahmanas are famous for coffee. And there, about 2 years ago, there were advertisements all over India for coffee. Some brand of coffee showing South Indian Brahmanas. That's like certifying this coffee is the best because the South Indian Brahmana, they drink it. So, previously that would be considered highly sinful. Prabhupada said when tea drinking was introduced in India, people wouldn't touch it. They thought it was sinful. They wouldn't touch it. Yeah. Prabhupada said that the British, they gave it away free, and they said it's good for health and this and that. And then they got people in the habit of it, and then they sold it to them. In this way, they got people in the habit of drinking tea. So, even if we see the most pious people today who are not cultivating Krishna consciousness, they're not pious even by the previous standards. And to maintain the piety in the modern city life, it's not possible to maintain the old standards. I mean, a Brahmana, he would only use water from a well in his own compound. Now, even if you have your own well, that's going to be mixed up with all the sewage water, the underground water. So you just can't maintain the same standards of purity. And then even if you're living in the city and you're trying to live a pure life, and in the meantime the smell of chicken comes floating through your window. So it's not possible to maintain purity. Harinama eva kevalam. Kalo nasteva 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 gatir anyata. Only by Harinam is it possible to be elevated, is it possible to be saved from degradation. But to help us, we're unfortunately, durdaivam idrisami hajani nanuragaha, we don't have taste. So to help us, so that to get up, to to help us from falling down while we're trying to go up, then this Varnashram communities are required. A non-devotee cannot be a Brahmana or a spiritual master. That's quoted from Brahmana and Vaishnava. That's a common quote. There are many Shastra quotes. A Vaishnava guru nasyat, Vaishnava svapacha guru. Unless a Brahmana gives up his pious fruitive activities, he cannot become a Vaishnava. These are quotes. This means a Brahmana is yet to become a Vaishnava. Then the first statement appears contradictory. Please resolve. It's all resolved in just understanding that words are used contextually. Is the following understanding regarding Asuri Varnashram correct? The Varnashram established in which there is no exclusive devotion to Vishnu and or ascertainment of Varna is by birth instead of qualities. Yes. Asuri Varnashram means that in which Vishnu Bhakti is not prominent and in which ascertainment by birth alone is prominent. Ascertainment of Varna by birth instead of qualities. Well, generally, as I said earlier, it would be by birth. When the society was stable and Garbhadhan Sanskar was being performed, then generally a boy born in, up until recently, a boy Brahmin, born in a Brahmana family would be considered a Brahmana. And we'd see that, I mean, until recently we could see was that people born in Brahmana families, they would have quite characteristic qualities and Vaishyas, and it's still today that they're Vaishya families in which that business spirit is there. We see that Marwaris, that's very strong, the Chettiars of Tamil Nadu. But then as they lose their culture, they lose that family tradition also. And then everyone just becomes a Shudra. In your previous lecture on the same subject, you said that Vaidiki Diksha is awarded to those qualified by birth as a consequence of all the sanskars being followed in their families since time immemorial. Exceptions to these are those who are born in Shudra families or exhibit qualities otherwise. And in Kali Yuga, Vaidiki Diksha is not possible. Vaidiki Diksha means that the family line. Someone's born in a Brahmana family and then they're given the Upanayanam and the Vedic training in the Shastra. But this is not possible in Kali Yuga. That's described in that book, Brahman and Vaishnava, because the family traditions are lost. As Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur pointed out, if there is even once in all the generations an error in performing the Garbhadhan Sanskar, which no one nowadays even heard of, let alone perform it, it's only in ISKCON or people who read Prabhupada's books have even heard of Garbhadhan Sanskar. So then the purity of the family line is lost. And so it's not applicable. To say we're Brahmanas by birth is no longer applicable in the proper sense of the term. That means even exceptions don't occur in Kali Yuga. But in Kali Yuga, Kalo Shudra Sambhava. Everyone has Shudra qualities. Born like that. But still in society, we see people interested in Krishi, Goraksha, Vanijam, and to a lesser extent, those who are exhibiting qualities of Kshatriyas and Brahmanas. So why exactly in Kali Yuga, Vaidiki Diksha is not possible? Exactly that, because it's a whole culture in a family line which is meant for, anyway for training. The training teaching of the Vedas is to teach, to chant the Vedas it's not possible, it's not even very meaningful. I mean, the whole tradition is lost of chanting the Vedas. And anyway, you chant Hare Krishna, you get far more benefit than chanting the Vedas. So it's not possible because the family traditions are lost. Who's going to give you Vaidiki Diksha? Who's qualified? Still, there are some families. You still find a few families that call themselves Vedic Brahmanas, and they're still keeping the amazingly. There are still some families who keep that up to some extent. Although they're probably all drinking coffee. It's not the worst of vices, but it does show that the culture, even those people who are trying to keep their tradition, even they're compromised to some extent. It's not possible, and it's not even... another reason it's not possible is that Brahmanas, pure Vedic Brahmanas, they should only accept alms and sustenance from completely pious people. But then, where are the pious people who are going to donate to them? They become contaminated. You become contaminated by taking alms from people who are not completely pure. So it's really not possible. The Varnashram system is not that you can just have Brahmanas. You have to have all the Varnas and Ashrams. And then there's Varnashram. It's just that you can't have a king without a kingdom, without citizens. You can't have Brahmanas without proper Kshatriyas and Vaishyas and Shudras. Everything's needed. So it's not possible in Kali Yuga, and it's not advisable, because you chant Hare Krishna, you get more benefit anyway. Why is it restricted that one should be initiated into Vedic mantras only once, though the Vedic mantras can belong to higher and lower spiritual levels? Namely, this question is based on misunderstanding. Tantra is not Vedic mantras. Tantra is something else. That's Vedic means, when we talk about Vedic mantras, that means from the Vedas. The tantras, they're not the Vedas. Vedic Brahmanas, they chant Vedic mantras. They don't even chant Srimad Bhagavatam. They chant the Vedas. So tantra, karma, jnana, yoga. And ultimately everyone should be initiated spiritually, pancharatrik, to go back home, back to Godhead. Will not such a restriction restrict a person's elevation to higher levels? Someone who's initiated, just say someone's got a Upanayana in the modern age, and from their father, whether it be off whoever. So Smarta Upanayana, we have no problem, you know, in initiating people. We don't even consider that to be that's off track altogether. The understanding that goes, the mantras might be good, but the understanding that goes with it, you need to get proper initiation. That verse I was trying to remember in Avaishnava Upadishtena Mantram Nirayam Rajet. One who takes a mantra from a non-Vaishnava, they go to hell by chanting that mantra. So, if one is initiated in a bona fide Vaishnav line, such as Sri Vaishnav or Madhva Sampradaya, then technically you don't need Diksha, although one may take Shiksha in the Gaudiya line. Although one maybe also one has to consider the quality of that initiation. That's a sensitive subject. Diksha is required to advance spiritually. But then, if one's been initiated, but the understanding behind the initiation is material, then that's not a spiritual initiation. And so there's no problem to initiate people by the proper system, the Vaishnava system. To worship deities and conduct fire sacrifices, one has to chant certain bija mantras, which require some specific purity on the part of the performer to be able to chant them offenselessly. And this is one of the reasons for awarding second or pancharatrika initiation. But to go home back to Godhead, second initiation is not a must. So is the following understanding correct? A sincere chant of the holy name doesn't necessarily have to worship the deities to go back home back to Godhead. Yes, deity worship is not required. One doesn't necessarily have to... Haridas Thakur wasn't even allowed in the temple. Let alone worship the deities. But if someone is engaged in worshipping deities, and in addition to chanting the holy names, he should be initiated into chanting the pancharatrika mantras for worshipping the deities to award him the purity needed to worship the deities. No, it's not exactly that the purity is awarded by chanting the pancharatrika mantras. It's not exactly the purity, but it's a certain esoteria or understanding. Along with the, what is that? Divyam jnanam yato dadyat. The diksha is meant for giving spiritual knowledge. So one who chants these mantras, anyone can chant Hare Krishna, but to worship the deities, one should have some understanding of the personality of the deity, the tattva of the deity. Otherwise, you see, you can call a brahmana and just stick them in front of any deity and worship. But actually, one should have an understanding of who that deity is and what is the mood in which they want to be worshipped. So the mantras that are for worshipping them just like we say in those mantras, Vidmahe. Who's Brahmin initiated? Yeah, you're very okay. Anyone else? Vidmahe, what does it mean? Chanting it every day? Who knows what it means? Anyone? It means we know. Vid means to know. So, with the chanting of the mantras is along with that goes knowledge of the deity who we are worshipping. There are different mantras for different deities. There are bij mantras, which those different bijas, they... Shamasunda Prabhu, you coming back? You going to come back again? Yeah. Is there a mic? I did want to speak to you some things. I'm sorry I had to go out again to the dock this morning. Are you going to come back again? Okay, well, speak loudly. I'll repeat what you say. Everyone's born a Shudra, yeah? By Sanskara, one becomes a Dvija, twice born. Mostly they stay at that level, yeah. Veda parted by studying Vedas, one becomes a Vipra. One who knows Brahma is actually a Brahma in the full sense of the term. Yeah. Yeah. You get twice born, but then you remain a stunted growth. What do they call that? A dwarf or something?
Brahmabandhu?
No, it's just like someone's a baby is born, but they don't grow. Their body, they're 30 years old and their body is still that of a child. Stunted growth, physically and mentally.
But different levels are recognized.
Yeah.
Maybe dvijas, maybe vipras, but then they don't, you know, so much shastra, but they don't actually understand. You know?
Right.
They're not Brahmin, they're just vipras. Papa mentioned that when Parikshit was born, had the, so many vipras were doing this horoscope at a different level.
Right, so that's the point. By sanskar, one becomes, by a purificatory ceremony, one is officially twice born, and then one has to actually study the Vedas to become known as a vipra.
We call it initiation.
Yeah.
Starting, not ending.
Yeah.
It's not only the start.
Initiation means to initiate, means to begin. Okay. Now I haven't.
One other thing is that it is most simply a material designation.
Yeah.
It's only a material designation. Being a Brahmana.
Yeah, I spoke about this at some length in Aircord also. The material, that's why I'm saying people are pushing for Brahminical initiation in our society. They're pushing because they think I'll be a better status. Then by that alone, they're totally disqualified from Brahminical initiation. The fact that they think I'll become better, I'll be better recognized. So, where are we going? No, these mantras that are chanted, they are meditate knowing the qualities of the deities who are worshipping. And for what purpose we're worshipping. They're meditative mantras. The cook doesn't have to chant any bij mantras, so why can't we allow the sincere chanters, not second initiated, to cook for the Lord? That's an interesting question. There are three kinds of brahmanas, Prabhupada explained once. According to fu is a Bengali word meaning to blow. So he said the one class of brahmana, they're blowing the fire. That means they're cooks. The next is blowing the conch. It's pujari. The next is blowing in the disciple's ear, speaking spiritual knowledge. There's one devotee, Bhumipati, he told me that once he was in Krishna Balaramandi, he was the pujari for Gaur Nitai, and he blew the conch, but he couldn't blow it properly. Prabhupada was there. Prabhupada took him off the altar. He said, "You can't blow the conch, you're not a brahmana." He didn't let him back on the altar for 2 months because he couldn't blow the conch properly. Interesting, huh? The cook does. Yeah, conventionally, yeah, the cooks just. Those who are cooks, yeah, they're generally. At least what we see in modern society, the cooks are generally not. Who are traditional cooks, brahmanas. They're not the learned type, generally speaking. But they should know who they're cooking for, isn't it? And why they're cooking. Otherwise, if they're thinking, "I'm cooking and great, afterwards we're going to have a feast. Hey, hurry up, pujari, bring it out. We want to enjoy here." If they have that mentality, then they're not fit to worship the Lord. So they should know. And that, again, it's the fact that they're initiated, it's an authorization. A sincere chanter, all right, so you're given Brahman initiation, that shows you're recognized as a sincere chanter. If a warning of the threat is to teach the materialists that Vaishnavas are not to be considered low caste, Then does that mean that this can be awarded at any time when a chanter's sincerity is ascertained and doesn't necessarily have to be combined with awarding pancharatrik mantras of second initiation, but are customarily done so? Now, one main reason for awarding the thread was to show that to other members of society that Vaishnavas, they should not be considered any less than brahmanas. But that meaning is practically... it doesn't apply in the modern age, because nowadays who cares whether you're born in a Brahmin family or not? It's how much money you earn. That is the Vitameva Kalonrinam Janmachara Gunodaya. One is in Kali Yuga, one is considered high class according to this money. That's all. Doesn't matter what so-called caste you are. Vitta. Money. That's the thing. So, let's discuss this a little more. Yeah, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he wasn't actually the first to do this, but he did give, threads of twice born to Vaishnavas. And in his mutts, those who are living in his mutts, he trained the Mattavasis, those living in the mutts, gave them very rigid training in understanding Shastra. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur spoke of the need for of Varnashram in society. Now, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings, we find that Varnashram is rejected. Not exactly rejected, but it's considered external to bhakti. Pure devotional services are haitukit. It doesn't depend on any material condition. Now, that it's considered ehobhajya, it's considered external to pure devotional service, doesn't mean that it's to be totally given up. It's just like you could say, like, breathing has also got nothing to do with pure devotional service. Right? Whether you breathe quickly or slowly or deeply, or it's got nothing to do with pure devotional service. Does that mean that breathing should be given up? It's got nothing to do with devotional service. Can anyone say that breathing has got anything to do with devotional service? No. So should it be given up? Not recommended. Because we have to perform devotional service with this body. Now it could be said that Varnashram has got nothing to do with devotional service. That's true. But at the same time, as long as you're in this material world, there are certain things which make it easy, as long as we're not on the totally transcendental platform, there are certain things which make it easier to execute devotional service. Just like in this season, it's not a bad idea to go out with an umbrella, because rain is expected at any time in this season. Anyway, the Tarian umbrella has got nothing to do with devotional service, but it helps to keep the body dry and therefore healthy, and then we can perform devotion. It's more difficult to perform devotional service if you've got a fever from going out in the rain without being protected. So in the same way, Varnashram has got nothing intrinsically to do with devotional service, but as long as we're not fully transcendental, it's a good idea to follow it, because it helps to create a situation which is useful or more favorable for devotional service. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he said, by giving this thread, he wasn't actually trying to set up a new society, but he was just making some facility for the Vaishnavas. But Prabhupada took the idea that Varnashram is required, Prabhupada took this to another stage altogether. We find in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he followed Varnashram principles to the extent that they were useful for devotees, or to the extent that they didn't interfere with devotional service. For instance, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never recommended to his followers, nor was it even expected or even thought of, that there would be inter-caste marriage. Shivananda Sen, he wouldn't get his children married to Prataparudra's children. They're from a different caste. So the usages which were there, which were not contrary to devotional service, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't go against them. Even though the Varnashram, people were considered brahmanas and vaishyas, and Kshatriyas to some extent. Although in Bengal, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, there was no question of a proper Varnashram society because it was being ruled by Muslims who were antagonistic to Vedic culture. So the pure Varnashram, there was no question of it, but still, to whatever extent it was going on, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted, but he didn't accept Varnashram usages that he didn't, on principle, accept Varnashram usages that were contrary or inimical to devotional service. He accepted Rupa and Sanatan, even though they were rejected from Brahminical society. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted them. He accepted Haridas, Thakur, even though these caste Brahmanas, some of them they protested. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had among his followers many caste Brahmanas who worshipped Haridas Thakur, but others protested against Haridas. Why is he being given so much honor? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself accepted sannyas because that was respected. It was useful for preaching Krishna consciousness. And up to the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although society was changing very much, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself was an example of that, but much of India was still following Varnashram in the sense that people, every Hindu was very conscious of the caste they were born into, and in most cases, their lifestyle would follow the caste they were born in. And even today, I was told, there are places in India where, no, not in India, in Sri Lanka, where people, they live like that. They live in the village, and people, there's no electricity, and people just follow the old system, and there's not even much communication with the outside world. People grow their own food, and they live in their village, and it's a very traditional society. So to a large extent, that was going on. The potter's son would become a potter, a barber's son would become a barber. His duties were very clear what he had to do and what not to do, and everything was very straightforward. Now that was breaking down. Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself left the village and came to the city and became a magistrate, which is, what's a magistrate? I mean, there's no such thing in exactly what the British system of magistrate, there's no such thing in the Vedic system. So that was broken down, and in the modern time it's completely broken down. Like I said, the only meaning to being a Brahmin is your name and a thread, and you try and get your son or daughter married to someone in the same caste, and that's it. So Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram, which Prabhupada's Varnashram initiative was very ambitious. Seeing the modern society completely degraded and fostering degradation, Srila Prabhupada recommended, make our own communities, go to the land, live simply, and chant Hare Krishna. So Prabhupada's, he took the whole Varnashram initiative, or he spoke of taking it a lot further than had previously been done. So nowadays, we give Brahmin initiation just to someone who's been in the movement 1 or 2 years, and I think they're supposed to pass a test or something. But personally, I just don't see the point. I don't see how it contributes to the Varnashram initiative to give Brahminical initiation to people who don't live as Brahmanas, who barely have time to chant their rounds, who are not deeply learned in Shastra, who are not going to give... Prabhupada wanted to create a Brahminical class to give spiritual guidance to society. It doesn't mean that everyone has to be Brahminically initiated. It's not just a ritual after you've been in the movement 1 or 2 years, and therefore it's time to take Brahminical initiation. I personally don't see the point. Maybe you could say it encourages people, but I don't see how. Now, I'm going to initiate 2 people tomorrow, Krishna willing, who they're not intellectual types. They're not going to be leaders of society in terms of Shastric knowledge. But because they... Actually, this shouldn't be done, but it's just a reality of ISKCON today that they're needed for deity worship. Actually, it should be round the other way. That we preach and we see who's qualified, and then when they're qualified, initiate as brahmanas, then when we get enough devotees, then we install deities. But nowadays, if someone says, yeah, I'd like to chant Hare Krishna, the next thing you know, someone's given him a set of deities and they're supposed to worship them. You know, in between watching the serials on TV, they might remember to wave a little incense at their deities. So, actually, Prabhupada wanted a Brahmana class who would people could look up to as spiritual leaders. That a Brahmana in ISKCON should be someone that not only the Vaishnavas, but that everyone can recognize by their spiritual qualities and their spiritual knowledge that they can apply in all situations to guide people. So, such persons this question, it's a chant of sincerity. You may be a very sincere chanter. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be Brahminically initiated. The chanting is important. The thread is not important. The thread, that's not going to take you back to God. The chanting will. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So is it the right conclusion? All Vaishnavas are paramarthic brahmanas. Well, if we say that Vaishnavas, all true Vaishnavas, are paramarthic brahmanas, if we could say a Vaishnava, the category of Vaishnava may also include Vaishnava prai, or people who are not really Vaishnavas, but they're almost Vaishnavas, trying to be Vaishnavas. Or sometimes they're called the prakrita bhakta. Materialistic devotee. Devotee can never be materialistic. But if he's somewhere in between being a devotee and being a materialist, then he'd be called a prakrita bhakta. But if he's prakrita, then he's not paramarthic. So what's called a materialistic devotee is not a paramarthic brahman. He's not really a paramarthic anything. He's just... Vaishnava prai, he might become a Vaishnava. Some of the paramarthic brahmanas may be vyavaharic brahmanas as well. A Vaishnava... I think, again, there's a confusion of terms. Someone who's on the spiritual platform, yes, he may act as a brahmana and he may not act as a brahmana. Arjuna was a brahmana, is that right? Well, there's a tough question now. Was he a brahmana? Was Arjuna a brahmana? Everyone knows Arjuna was a kshatriya. But he's more of a brahmana than so many brahmanas because brahma janatiti brahmana. He knows Krishna. So he's a brahmana in the true sense of the term. But his duty and his very being, he is Arjuna. He's meant for serving Krishna as he is. Krishna doesn't want him to start offering, making sacrifices and chant, spending all day studying the Vedas. Krishna doesn't want him to do that. But he's in a much better position being who he is, Arjuna, than trying to be something which he's not. Shreyo Swadharma Viguna Paradharma Bhayavaha. That's why Krishna says it's better to stick to your own duty. Second initiation is for awarding paramarthic brahmanahood. Actually, you can't really award paramarthic brahmanahood. You can't make someone a brahmana or you can't make anyone a Vaishnava by sitting them in a ceremony. It's a misunderstanding. That ceremony is to formalize the commitment to take the training to become a Vaishnava or a Brahmana. But it doesn't convert you. Sangskara bhavet dvija. By the ceremony, you become twice born. You're considered twice born. But it doesn't make you into a Brahmana. That is a misunderstanding. The respected Madhvacharya accepted, this is a quote from Brahmana and Vaishnava, accepted the path of archana meant for Kanishta Adhikaris. Is the deity worship in our sampradaya for Kanishta Adhikaris? Yes, it's for Kanishta Adhikaris, for Madhyam Adhikaris, and for Uttama Adhikaris. It's for all. But it's especially helpful for, of course, again, what's understood by Kanishta Adhikari here? One who is not mature in Naam Bhajan may be called a Kanishta Adhikari. So the Kanishta Adhikaris are materialistic devotees who think the form of the Lord to be stone. Not necessarily. It may just mean Jaha Komal Shraddha, Shri Kanishta Jan. Their faith is not very strong. So it may be difficult for them to have faith in the holy name. For them to understand Krishna and Krishna Bhagavat Tattva, Vijnanam, scientific knowledge of Krishna consciousness, that may be very difficult, but they're attracted to deity worship. We see generally at Arati, so many people will come to the Arati. We see that in our ISKCON temples. In Baroda, in Gujarat, every night there are several hundred people for Arati. Afterward in the class, there's 10 or 15. People like Arati. So that's good. They can come. Yeah, but the pujari himself, at least in our temples, he should be able to give knowledge. Temples are... Those who are worshipping the temple, traditionally they would worship the deity and study Shastra also, right? And they're meant for giving, the priests in the temple are meant for giving spiritual knowledge. There's a tradition that you should sit down before leaving the temple, right? Don't leave without, sit down, they sit down, 2 seconds, they're up again and gone. Those who still follow them. You're supposed to sit and hear something. Not just sit, you should sit and listen. But there's no one to speak and no one to hear. They don't have the culture of hearing. How does our Bhagavat Marg deity worship differ from that in Sri Ramanujan? We're not, our deity worship, Bhagavat Marg, that means we're doing Bhagavat Marg and Pancharatrik Marg side by side. The deity worship, the point is that this deity worship should go on side by side with Shravan and Kirtan. And Kirtan means not just singing, but hearing explanations of Shastra also. So, how does that differ from Sri Ramanuja and Vishnu Swami Sampradaya? Why Vishnu Swami? How does our deity worship differ? Well, it may differ in so many ways. But the Shravan and Kirtan is also accepted in those sampradayas. So although they don't use the same terms, they also perform, they don't talk of Bhagavati Marg, Bhagavata Marg, but they're also doing Shravan and Kirtan, or at least supposed to. The book, again, these questions, it may require much research and to, you know, if we're going to start comparing the Gaudiya Sampradaya with the Ramanuja Sampradaya, I mean, it's a very big topic. Their whole understanding and maybe different in various subtle ways. I don't see that it's so important to understand this anyway for everyone. It is the fact that the followers of the Pancharatras accepted support of karma and jnana. Here he's talking about, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is talking about Ramanuja and Madhva Sampradaya. Such processes cannot be compared to pure devotional service preached by Sri Chaitanya Dev. Sri Chaitanya Dev emphasized the... again, it's a very, very big topic. I don't know how much we can get into it. Ramanuja and Madhva, they both said that bhakti is meant for mukti. So, I mean, it's a very different conception to that of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I don't know how much I can get into this here. Why did Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur give Brahma Gayatri along with Pancharatric mantras? I don't know if he specifically stated that. But on the other hand, why not? The Brahma Gayatri is the prime Vedic mantra, ultimately meant for worshipping Vishnu. In one purport, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that the Brahma Gayatri is worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The Savitur mentioned here is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It means Krishna. Now Chaitanya, what is that? Sarvaishvarya Purno Iha Bhagavan Sasvayamayam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna. So ultimately it's meant for worshipping Krishna. The fact that that's given in pretty much all sampradayas, the smarter sampradaya or whatever deity is being worshipped, that doesn't mean that it belongs to anyone else. Actually, this mantra is only meant for worshipping Vishnu. But it's also used subsidiarily for worshipping other deities by those who don't have full knowledge of the actual meaning of Brahma Gayatri. Second initiation, why did Prabhupada call it Brahmin initiation? Because actually it's Vaishnava initiation, what we call second, and giving the thread. Prabhupada called it Brahmin initiation because, as I see, Prabhupada wanted to make a class of brahmanas. He specifically wanted to make a class of brahmanas who could lead society. Okay, well, that's it. I mean, it could be elaborated on much more in many ways, and much more research could be done on all these points. There are many misunderstandings and misconceptions in Hindu society, which along with the good culture, so many bad things have come, just like we may praise Shankaracharya for having saved the Vedic culture, which he did. But at the same time, the conceptions that came along with it are not exactly the right conceptions. So it's a mixed bag. Hindu culture means, there are many good things, but there's a lot of wrong ideas also about everything. Actually, everyone has to learn everything. Again, it's not that I am a Hindu and therefore I know everything, as we used to hear. But I would agree with that. I would just say you should just slightly change it to say, I am a Hindu and I know everything wrong. I got it all wrong. So everything has to be relearned. There are so many misconceptions. Vidvan Gauranga, Prabhu, you going to say anything?
Well, just one point came to my mind. Ramanujacharya's concept of mukti is to to serve the Supreme Lord with pure devotional service in his abode.
Yeah.
And Vishwanath Chakravarti refers to this concept as Premavat Parshatattva,
mm-hmm.
be an associate of the Supreme Lord with pure love. Madhvacharya, from what I can see,
but you'll see that at least in the modern Ramanuja literature, it's the emphasis is given on escape from material life. So it's not that the prema is emphasized.
Yeah. Madhvacharya, in his writings, I've seen only one place where he acknowledges that devotees who...
Well, there is a specific definition of bhakti given by him, and he specifically uses madhva.
Vaidhi bhakti definition with knowledge of the supremacy of the Supreme Lord.
Yeah, knowledge of his supremacy. Yeah. That's Vaidhi, of course Vaidhi, for him. Vaidhi. Yeah.
Vaidhi. Then one with full affection for the Supreme Lord and higher than one should have devotion to the Supreme Lord over and above everything else.
I didn't see that in the general definition that's given. Anyway, again, it needs more research. But there's definitely... There's no doubt that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized prema pumartho mahan. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is given anarpita chiring chirat. He gave that which was not given for a very long time since he last came. But yes, there is a lot of research needed in all these fields. That's why we need brahmanas. That's why I always say, when I come to Bangalore, you know, young men are coming, why become a rat all your life? You're in the rat race, become a swan. Swans don't race, the rats are racing. The swans don't race, they very graciously swim through the waters of pure devotion. And then they put their neck and they bring out the nectar. So come and get trained and do shastric research and teach. Why be a rat? Professional rat, highly paid rat. Or if you don't like to be a rat, if you don't think that's too insulting, we could call you a donkey also. When you get this knowledge, then why do you want to spend your life as a donkey? I mean, you could have a Brahmin thread over your shoulder which you hide so no one can see it. And you can tell I'm a brahmana, but practically you're engaged as a donkey or a rat. So if you can be a swan, then why be a donkey? You may be a Vaishnava, but better be engaged as a Vaishnava. Yeah.
Just that Krishna takes care of all those who are honestly and sincerely functioning as brahmanas under their spiritual master's instructions. The devotee should be aware of that. They shouldn't be terrified with these ideas.
Who will look after you? Who will pay the bills if I serve Krishna? It's Shudra mentality. You've been trained from childhood to think that some human being will maintain you. Krishna will look after you. And even if he doesn't, jibane morone gati arnahi mo, that's what we sing. It's not just meant to be a nice song. Just like there are so many love songs, I love you. Even if the moon falls out of the sky, I love you. It's just a song. You don't mean it. It's just a song. So we have these songs. We're not just supposed to sing them. It's actually supposed to be what we actually live and feel. So, yeah. That's what it's supposed to be. Not that we spend most of our lives serving some Kripana Durajana. We can serve Krishna. Now, of course, it may be difficult for most people to wrench themselves out of the hellish situation in which they're in, which somehow they think is respectable because they're being paid more than other people in the same and similar hellish situation. So they think, well, it's not so hellish because you see, I'm earning 50,000 rupees a month and those people are only earning 10,000 rupees a month. So, you see, I've got gold shackles and instead of iron shackles. I'm burning in the fire, but I'm tied to the stake with gold chains and those people are tied by iron chains. So you see, I'm in a better situation. But the burning of material life is the same. So better get in the fire of Krishna consciousness. All right, anything else? Are you going to have arati or is that going to be an hour late? Or? Let's go. Tulsi arati at what time? Are doing it? It goes on outside, is it? Okay, yeah.
Given the lack of
genuine varnashram today,
in the West, any sort of varnashram outside of money,
it's really not much different in India today. I mean, there's talk of it. Oh, yeah, my grandfather. We hear people say that my grandfather he was very pious. People say, I say, what about you? My grandmother used to chant all these prayers. Very pious. Yeah.
Well, given the lack of that context, how do we know what our duty is? And then a second question related to that is, just for example, like say if you're an American and the U.S. government says, we're having a draft now, and it's your duty to go and fight in this war, like in Vietnam. It's not for Krishna, so in that situation, would it be better to become a conscientious objector?
This is a very detailed question. I'm not going to answer it because it's tangential to the main discussion. There are many, many questions like that. There are difficulties in setting it up. What is our duty? Our duty is to serve according to Srila Prabhupada's order to establish this mission that he gave us. So there should be these communities. It's not there, well, we should have to work on establishing them. There are many questions because it becomes difficult. Like if you're living on the land, they expect you to pay taxes and this and that. We don't have any money or any. The whole idea is don't have. As long as we're using money, we're tied up to that society. So the whole idea is don't use money at all. Finished. No money. But that was. Prabhupada was so revolutionary. People don't realize this is the most from the social point of view, this was the most revolutionary thing that Prabhupada proposed. And it seems that most of our devotees, they're afraid to take that up. It's just. It's too much venture into the unknown. But then you fall back. Then you have to be in some kind of society. And if you live in a society, you have to live according to its norms. It becomes very difficult to practice Vaishnavism. And then we find our devotees, they adopt the materialistic culture of the sinful society they're living in, which creates so many problems. We find even among devotees, there's no caste system so much among our ISKCON devotees, but it's more like how much money you're earning, you're considered, or what is your educational qualification. You say, this devotee's got a master's degree from IIT. Oh, really? Oh. Salam. It's the same materialistic culture, we think. Someone's very rich, or they're What is this? It's just some chanting Hare Krishna. Yeah, but chanting Hare Krishna, but you know, they're not educated. They don't come from a good family. Really? Does that mean that Krishna doesn't accept his chanting? Or maybe as a result of his chanting, in his next life he'll be born in a good family and go to IIT, and then he can go back to God. Is that correct? Then why do we have these attitudes? It's absolutely materialistic. But it's comfortable. We feel comfortable with that because that's the whole society that we live in, and that's the way we're brought up, and we don't have to think very much. We don't have to adjust very much. We can go, basically, we can go on in a materialistic way and think of ourselves as very spiritual, although we haven't even taken up the first understanding of Krishna consciousness, that sarva padivi nirmuktam tat paratvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. What is Krishna consciousness? Service to Krishna. But before that, there's a consideration to be free of material designation. And unless we do that, we can't engage our senses in the service of Krishna. We can't actually perform devotional service as long as we have mundane conceptions. It doesn't really happen. So we need brahmanas to live like this, speak like this. Otherwise, we can end up with Shukracharya, Shanda, Amarka, they're also brahmanas. They're also teaching Vedic knowledge. Make sure our gurukul should not become an asurakul. Make sure your children get a good education. What if they don't want to be devotees? You better train them up to be a demon like everyone else in case they don't want to be a devotee. First of all, you train them to be a demon, and then later on, if they want, they can choose to be a devotee. We take it as normal to be a demon. Modern education is demoniac. It's totally centered on making money, totally centered on becoming an idiot, working hard all your life for someone you don't know, who doesn't give a damn about you, who just wants to exploit you. You have to give your life to do something you don't want to do. You have no interest in it, actually. You just do it because you're making... The only reason is to make some money, that's all. And that's what you stupid people, and not necessarily you, but who it applies to, may take it, they think, I got a good education, a good job. Good education, good job means you're just a complete fool if you think that's good education and a good job. It means you're being totally fooled. Good education means Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, Archanam, Bandhanam. You all know this verse? Then what's the next line? Dasyam, Sakyam, Avanivayam. What comes after that? Huh? Say it. Itipung Sarpita Vishno. Bhaktis Shainavalakshana. Tadadita Vantam Uttamam. I also forgot it. This is in answer to Hiranyakashipu's question, what is the best thing you have learned? And Tanmanye Aditam Uttamam. This, Prahlad said, I consider this to be the topmost education. He rejected the materialistic education. So it's not just a story and then you give your children. You see, we also give in the Prahlad coloring book and he can fill it in. But Prahlad, see what he taught. Do you dare to teach to your children what Prahlad taught? To his father. To his father, yeah. Of course, you can learn the shlokas. Teach your children shlokas. But are you going to teach them what they actually mean and what the implications of that are? You have the faith to do that. Otherwise, you become a Hiranyakashipu. Gave his child a good education. He thought he was giving him the best. Okay, anything else here? Savyasachi has any more questions? Sorry? Yeah. Someone's not giving their name, but they have a question. What is the question?
Can a person initiated in Madhva life be initiated in ISKCON? What is the value of that initiation?
Can a person in the Madhva line, initiated in the Madhva line, be initiated in ISKCON? Can be. Not impossible. You have to see. What is this? If the point is, if you're actually getting spiritual guidance, if that initiation has spiritual value or not, was it done as a spiritual function or as a formality? Initiation of Vaishnava Sampradaya means to be accepted as a servant of Vishnu. So you may be initiated in any Sampradaya and then you can take Shiksha in the Gaudiya Sampradaya also. But if one feels that they, or if it's ascertained, they're not just feel, but there should be, if it's understood that there's no actual spiritual life in that initiation, then it has no actual meaning. Diksha must always be accompanied by Shiksha to make it meaningful. Otherwise, it's just a formality. It has no actual meaning. Yeah.
What is the duty of a brahmachari?
What is the duty of a brahmachari? Yeah.
Because by nature, not only brahmanas are joining the ashram, all classes of people join the ashram.
All classes of people are joining the ashram, yeah. Well, that's one reason why we need the Varnashram system, because for city temples are meant for preaching. Otherwise, there's no reason to be in the city. So all classes of people may join, but actually, those who are in the city, they should... Of course, there may be various classes of people in serving in the city also, but the emphasis should be on preaching. So we need preachers, people who can be trained as preachers in the cities.
Whereas many times we are advised, saying that being a brahmachari, you should read for long hours.
Read for some time. Not necessarily read for long hours, but there may, yeah, classes should be there. Service, it's always, there's always that pressure of service, yeah. I would recommend temples, yeah, we have to establish temples, but maybe don't take on too much, so that in one way it's good to keep devotees busy, but on the other hand, we have to see that devotees are trained in shastric understanding. Otherwise, what are they going to preach? There should be a balance. Otherwise, what happens is people join and after some time they go away feeling that I didn't get what I came for. So... there should be a balance. So if we just sit and study all day, then also we won't understand. We have to do service to help that to be realized. There are cases in Shastra. Who is that? Uddalak, was it? He went to the ashram and he was just given service for years. He was never taught anything. He was just giving, looking after the cows and all different things. But in the end, he got it all. See, in the early days of ISKCON, as a pioneering movement, there's a lot of outgoing work to do. But gradually, we should come to the stage where we're able to accept people, and it's not like a constant emergency. We're able to accept people and train them. But in all situations, there should be a balance. It's not that it's just service. And Prabhupada set up the system of having sadhana from 4:30 in the morning till 8:30 in the morning, and then again in the evening. And Prabhupada said that, well, he said different things at different times and different circumstances. He said if devotees have time, they can read in the day. On other occasions, he said they should read at least 1 or 2 hours a day. So it may depend on different circumstances. In the circumstance you're in, here in Bangalore, trying to re-establish the movement after some major disaster. So it may be expected that your workload will be more, but it may not necessarily be like that forever. Hare Krishna. In Salem, they have a pretty good balance, is it? I mean, devotees got into a book distribution, but then they all sit together every day and read, and then time to time there are courses. So devotees do get to learn. I mean, the thing is, if you want to learn, there's always more to learn, and you always feel, I haven't learned enough. You always feel like, I just like to sit and read. But there is service to do. So I in my time, before I took sannyas, even as a brahmachari, I managed to read quite a lot. I used to... Actually, when I first joined, I was told that reading is maya. Can you imagine? I didn't believe it. I was told that reading books is maya. I said, because it's just an excuse to go to sleep, because usually that's what happened. We usually only slept 4 to 5 hours a night. I used to go out on book distribution, take Prabhupada's books, sit down for an hour and read and then do books. And I did as much or more than anyone else. Yeah. Sorry, I couldn't. Yeah, let the mic go. Right. Yeah. Sevon muke hi jivado. Swayameva spurati adaha. By service, knowledge becomes revealed. So both things are required. So, anything else? Anything else there? No. Okay, that was quite technical, but these points are also needed to be understood if we are to establish Varnashram. Yeah. What is the difference between... Well, that was already discussed. Asuri Varnashram means that in which... Varnashram means Varnashram Acharavata Purushena Parapuman Vishnur Aradhyate Panta Nanyatapto Shakaranam. Varnashram means the system in which there's Varnas and Ashrams, and the center is Vishnu Aradhana, worship of Vishnu. And if there's only Varnas and Ashrams and there's no Vishnu Aradhana, or it's relegated to just one ritual among others, then that's not actual Varnashram. That's called Asuric Varnashram, in which just the externals are followed, but the actual point of worshipping Vishnu is not. And in that, then where there's service to Vishnu, then that's Daiva, that's godly. And in Asuric culture, exploitation is dominant. And then then the castes which are meant to cooperate for mutual benefit, then one caste, they claim dominance over others for the sake of exploitation. And then you get the infamous Indian caste system. India's got a lot of bad publicity all over the world for the caste system. It's highlighted in Western academia, or the Western picture that in the West, the picture that's painted of India is of caste system. How exploitive caste system, and how almost every woman gets burned to death by her husband. Right? Is that right in India? Oh, there's a lot of women. They survived. This is the picture painted of India in the West, of a very backward society in which there's caste.